Okay, I'm going to go because I'm speaking to this too. And then I've got Mary, Hart, Jim, and I guess Lou, that's why you had raised your hand. So we'll see about the sequence. You said something in your presentation about the alternatives being cheaper and everything, and you know, if we used our money this way instead of that. But there's another economic aspect to this, and it's got a chokehold on the system, and that is that the utilities can't make as much money off of these cheaper alternatives. The people would benefit, but the corporations wouldn't benefit unless we restructure the models. Mm-hmm. And I've started to think the situation's gotten so desperate, we just have to give the bastards the money and just beg them to not produce energy and to lead us into not wasting so much, because we're wasting half of everything we produce is just wasted. So that's the first place. Before you get into the sexy, you know, solar and wind, we quit wasting it. And then we get into the solar and wind, and again, they don't compete economically for the people doing them. And so, you know, the people in North Carolina that want to have a livelihood, they don't care what type of power plant they're working at or what kind of activity, but the driver at the corporate level is the problem. Mary?
They do make money, Glenn.
As much on efficiency as they do on generating electricity?
Who doesn't make the money is Kellogg, Brown & Root, and Bechtel, and all those guys who need big, massive construction projects, because it doesn't take the same level of physical plant to harness the wind, or to harness the sun, or to do appropriate hydro. You could probably get them involved in nifty tidal stuff someday, and the offshore wind they could probably get involved with, but this is plain old graft. This is plain old corruption. This is plain old, you know, whatever. And that's why it gets so hard. But I tend to agree with you that I'd rather pay them to not kill us. And that's really how I think about it now. So where we come around. But the reason I raised my hand, and I'm just going to do a quick course on your question about people's attitudes. Mm-hmm. I came to the South to live in 1999. I'd been working in and out of the region for 3 years intensively because of this plutonium fuel idea. And these reactors with the red spots on them are, you know, the proposal is that they would have plutonium fuel, so that's why they have the red spots on them. And I came to the region to educate people about that. That was the campaign I was working on at the time I moved here. And I give these incredibly complicated talks because you get like 20 minutes to talk to a Sierra Club group or something, and you're trying to explain the whole thing in that amount of time. And it's really frustrating. And one guy who was like 80 years old or 75 years old at a real close to here in Brevard, at a Sierra Club chapter meeting, but raised his hand at the end. He said, you know, you gave a good talk, I learned a lot, but why don't you just make it simple? Why don't you just say no nukes? He said, you know, you're trying to not alienate people who like nukes, but why don't you just say no nukes? Because that's what we found out with forestry, he said. When we said this amount of cutting and that kind of sustainable management and all this and that, and then we started saying no cutting on public lands, that's when the real campaign got going and just said no. And I said, well, sir, when they started saying that's what you needed to do, did you agree with the people who said that? He said, no. He said, but I saw it was getting results. And so I honestly think that there's a lot of people in this region who do get what the situation is and who are ready and have in the past, and this evening on the panel, I won't tell the whole story, but we'll be hearing from Brett Versey, who mobilized thousands of people in this region in the past. So yes, there's the interface with the folks who are not activists, who need to be treated with respect and who need work, and I agree totally with Lou's point that we can be talking about the more jobs per kilowatt hour that are in renewables and efficiency, and yet I also think that the region is full of people who are totally ready to join us today, and, you know, this convergence next year will be very much bigger because of that. And we're not that different from any other region.
So. Okay, now, Hart and then Jim are on the stack, but if we're on a track of responding to Karen, maybe y'all should say if that's why he raised your hand, or if we're...
yeah, that's what I
was going to say. Okay,
please. Actually, it's an indirect response, because it's a more... latching on to Lou's point, and there's a famous, very graphic example of the solution to that problem. Rancho Seco, the Rancho Seco nuclear reactor, was shut down by, it was the only reactor I think that's ever been shut down by a citizen. The citizens voted to shut it down. And what they did was they put up a lot of solar photoelectric. They basically added a solar electric farm because they can use the same turbine, they can use the same generator, and they can use the same power grid. They can use everything except the water boiler, you know? And probably that would produce more jobs, I think, in general, nuclear power. Well, again, of course, your point is it wouldn't be the right people getting the jobs. It wouldn't be KBR and Bechtel, but that's something to point. That's something that certainly ought to be made widely known. So that's the point I wanted to make. You can argue to people in places where there are existing power plants and new plants are slated to be licensed, that there is an alternative, that the land can be the vast plots of land that are always involved in nuclear power plants can be used much more safely and much more labor intensively with some other form of energy. So yeah, that was my point.
Jim?
Yes.
Well, I'd like to add to that because I really studied the Rancho Seco situation, and in the course of doing that, discovered there was a very enlightened utility executive out there, and his name is even symbolic, Dave Freeman, and he's TVA. He was Carter's appointee. He wrote the energy paper with Arjun Makajani, who was a new postdoc guy who runs Institute for Energy and Environmental Research, and we've got his newsletter about why nukes won't do global warming over there. There's just a few copies, but help yourself, it's all free. And this was, Carter adopted it. It was the only energy policy we've ever had in the United States, or we haven't had one since then, a real one. And so I got to meet him. And he said, you know, the solar plant is so sexy, and actually he didn't do that. They already had that in place, and then they were looking for a way, because see, they're a public utility, and so they are motivated to save money, unlike the profit-making utilities, Duke and Southern Company, okay? And he said, what we did was we bought back all the old dinosaur refrigerators that were in people's garages, cooling a six-pack and the Thanksgiving leftovers, because we didn't want to juice them. We didn't want to power them. So they bought them from people. They put solar panels out there and they charged people, and Steve Smith picked up on this and talked about the photovoltaic project. It may still be something that he's pushing. They planted trees, they painted houses white, they put white roofing material on them to reflect the heat and keep the insides of the building cooler. They worked with industry to tighten up where they were like bleeding heat out of the ductwork and then running the air conditioner to cool it down. And they went in and the utility did this so they would not have to generate the power, because the other thing is it's a small utility and the nuke plant was half their power. So when voters decided to do this, they had to, you know, act. And so it was not one fix. It's a creative smorgasbord. And so that's a really wonderful example to bring up.
Can I win another one?
Yeah.
What's the name of it again?
This is Rancho Seco. It was near Sacramento in California. And actually, when I worked for NEARS, like I said, down to California, worked on that campaign. And the thing that was unique about Rancho Seco was the people that were being placed at risk were also the ones getting to vote about the reactor. It wasn't an entire state voting on it. Yeah. It was the people that were right there. And this reactor had screwed up royally. If you go back into the history of the closest near misses we've had in this country, one of the ones is when some idiot dropped a light bulb into the control panel at the reactor there, and they basically shorted out the system. And had that reactor been operating a little while longer, they basically overcooled the reactor core. And if you do that and your vessel is old, you can basically shatter, like taking a glass out of a hot dishwasher and filling it with cold water. If there's a crack in that glass, it's going to go. And that could have happened at Rancho Seco. So the people who actually replaced it risked it, been reading horrific headlines about how bad this plant was, were also having to pay the financial cost of this reactor, were the ones that actually got to vote on it. The other referendums we have run in different states, it's been basically statewide and a much tougher sell.
Mary is on the stack, but I noticed there's a couple of people here that haven't spoken yet, and you know, you have an invitation. If you'd like to. Okay, Mary.
It's kind of a question or statement that he was talking about the plutonium reactors they set up or whatnot, but they don't have the technology to actually make them work. So I never knew that they actually went ahead and built entire power plants that were never even used. So is there any way taxpayer dollars ever get replenished for companies? I mean, I know it's kind of a ridiculous question, I'm not laughing at asking, but I'm just curious as to, is there any protocol at all like that?
Liz had pointed out before about construction work in progress, and basically these corporations have been glomming the money before the plants were even, it's already money. But in some, what happened back in the 90s when they restructured the electricity environment, they basically tried to, in some instances, you know, compensate the public, but in reality, money's long gone.
I mean, they should return it.
That would make sense.
Did you have your hand up?
Hart
did.
Yeah. I just wanted to clarify one thing. We conflated two things here. Breeder reactors and plutonium reactors. They're not the same thing. A plutonium reactor is just a reactor that runs on plutonium, which may have been achieved by reprocessing uranium or waste in an ordinary uranium reactor, a breeder reactor like the Phoenix that you mentioned, the Clinch River that they tried to set up in Tennessee. Those are frightening things. They can actually explode like atomic bombs. You can actually have if one of those goes bad, it can actually go critical. And the reason for that is that while you're producing power, you're actually producing high-grade plutonium at a critical mass level, and you have to keep it separated. You know, it's very complicated, and nobody's been able to do it. And it used to be said that, well, you know, nukes are forever because we can produce the fuel while we use it, and it turns out you can't do it. It's just beyond. You have to be you have to have a totally irrational religious faith in nuclear engineers to believe that it can ever be done, sort of like the fusion reactor.
Sort of like religion.
Pardon me?
It's a religion.
It's a religion, yeah, it is. It's an article of faith. Oh yeah, well, we can always, there's nothing engineers can't do, but they can't do it. They've been trying. It's like fusion, you know, every 20 years, or it's like finding a place for the waste. Every 20 years they say, well, we're going to have to wait another 20 years. I mean, I've been counting down, you know, the 20-year cycles. It's usually 20 years that they promise the next one that it'll be ready.
Fusion remains 50 years in the future.
Yeah. So it's like, it's a little bit like heaven, you know. Eventually you'll go to heaven.
Mary?
And I'm the last one?
No, you want to be last.
I want to be last, and we're about at time, so maybe those who are...
Well, Karen was on the stack, so...
I'll be quick. In Western New York, I live in New York now, and there was a reprocessing plant. I don't know a whole lot about it, but it was... I think it was running in the 60s.
Yeah, it was West Valley.
Yes, West Valley. It's still a big, huge mess out there. Uh-huh. And there are citizen groups who live around the area who are trying to get help all these years later, and like really nothing has been done at all.
That's
and
not true.
It's not in terms of help.
There's a lot left to be done. It would be fair.
It's a very long story.
My understanding was that there was...
It's still a huge mess, yes.
Still a huge mess. It's still billions away from...
And they processed a tiny fraction of what's proposed to be reprocessed in our tax money is just flowing. It's like a big drain hole of tax money, and all in there. And it's on NEARS website, and NEARS has a staff member that the expert is also from that area and is the national expert. What was your name again?
Andrew.
Andrew.
I have a question, I guess, since we've been campaigning on this stuff for years and years and years, decades. What have you found to be successful in your activism to make an imprint against this industry or to stop the actors or whatever it is? Some things that have worked.
I'm going to say that's a really huge question, but tonight, the elder, is this fair, the elder panel has been picked to talk about a variety of effective approaches. And also you can count on us to sit around tonight and want to caucus and talk all night about this. So come hang out with us. I'd like to say super quick, and then Mary's going to wrap us up, that, and Liz wants to speak. So.
Oh, I was just going to respond to the question of way back about people in the South. I think a lot of people in the South do actually believe that nukes are safe. Like, I feel like that safe, clean, like, is still put out there, and a lot of people really think that. Like, students that we work with, some of them are, like, really bought into that, and I think a lot of it is also professors at universities that are bought off by these industries that won't say anything bad about nuclear, and even are saying good stuff. And, like, some university programs are, you know, saying that nuclear is the solution to climate change or whatever, and I think that I'm really concerned about that. And I think there has been really good messaging and stuff around mountaintop removal and coal, and so I think that, like, you don't meet anyone who thinks, you know, I rarely meet anyone who's ever thinks coal's a good idea, but, you know, there are those people. But I think that nuclear is something that there's still a lot of people who think coal is bad, but they think that nuclear is okay and it's not as bad. So I think there's definitely a need to, like, talk more about mining or about, like, really bad things so people are like, oh, no. So, like, get into a good messaging.
It's amazing how quickly you can change people's minds. Just a one-on-one, you tell people, start, just begin the litany of all the horrible things about nuclear power. And they hell, I'm against it. You know, I mean, it really is almost.
So, then, were you?
Mary, you're going to wrap it up. I'm getting a little action award to pass around.
Okay.
Everybody that's on the postcard.
Oh, okay. I was going to quickly respond to what Hart was saying.
All right.
So, you're at the Mary.
But we're at time, I guess.
Okay. Okay. Right. I thought you were going to end the meeting.
I'm happy to listen to you, but I just wanted to say that people also have a right to leave. It's okay. But we can have the conversation.
Okay, go ahead. You're saying it is it. That's why we're having the Southeast Convergence. That's sort of my opinion. This is it. Okay. That's what we're up against.
Okay. What I want to do for just a moment is to be sure that everybody in this circle does know that the largest industrial accident ever in the recorded history of the human race was the explosion and subsequent fire at the Chernobyl reactor, which was at that time in the USSR, on April 26, 1986. Do I have the date wrong? No, that's right. Okay. They were just doing a routine test, and whammo, the thing exploded. We still have an argument in our community whether it was a nuclear explosion or a regular, plain old chemical kind of explosion, but it exploded. And it had graphite moderation, so the graphite spewed out, and for 14 days the things burned. The radioactivity went around the northern hemisphere at least 6 times in that time. And yes, the immediate area was devastated and people's lives were disrupted, and at 10 years the estimates were $350 billion and 30,000 deaths. I don't have a more updated figure, but there is not another event in human history from industrial activity that parallels that. The estimates on the numbers of deaths from latent cancers are anywhere from, oh yeah, maybe 4,000 people, to John Goffman, independent expert, who puts it over a million, who will die over time from the radioactivity from Chernobyl. There's a report that came out last year on the 20th anniversary in 2006, Torch it's called, for the other Chernobyl report. It's very important for people to know and understand that over half of the cancers that will occur are not in the immediate area of the reactor.
they are spread out across the Northern Hemisphere, all over Western Europe, in particular in terms of densities of population, because radiation is radiation, people are people. The effectiveness of the radiation at causing cancer has to do with how many people are exposed to it. And so all the population centers across Western Europe will account for more than half of the deaths long-term from Chernobyl. So when people say it's safe, when people say it's clean, they are absolutely turning their eyes away from history. So please know that we are not making it up when we say it's not safe and it's not clean. And I know you all know that, but I need on Nagasaki Day to affirm the fact that there is no peaceful atom. And thank you all for coming.
Not worth the risk.
John Goffman, it's in my little handout, but he said nuclear power is mass, random, premeditated murder.
And now, please indulge me. We have two new nukes proposed for Georgia, and there's a lot of activity on it. And this is our contribution. We're going to hit them with a rainbow and change the consciousness. So instead of suing them, we're going to write them a really nice letter and say, we know you're taking our tax money, you creeps. We know you have a nuclear waste problem. We want to help you with it. We want to help you make an unwholesome profit on clean energy. So you've got a little stamp, our contribution to help you get this in the mail, and thank you.
Where do you work?
If people wanted to.
Where are you located?
We're in Atlanta.